Thank you. My name is Kerry Ruiz, and you saw a little overview at the beginning. And now we're going to talk about the part of California that I'm passionate about. I spent a good portion of my career working on soil surveys in this area. So this is my co-authors here, Philip Smith as well. And so we're gonna take a look, and we're gonna look at a lot of different areas in the valley, and a lot of different implications to the drought, and the response to the drought, because that's really what it is. A lot of it. It's having a dramatic effect on life in parts of California. We're gonna concentrate on human responses to drought, but also what the drought's doing. Human activity has historically been influenced by extended periods of drought. The Anasazi probably left the area of the Four Corners area in response to a very long drought. The nice thing about mobility is you can move. It's a little hard when we have all of our permanent cities there now. So it's in this case, those were permanent cities, and they were just left there. So that's what happened in their case. Okay. Human responses to drought in California have consequences, especially in the Central Valley. I did a talk on Monday about an old man that died in 1909 up in this area, and he had a house up there. But after the 76-77 drought, a dam was put on this small creek called Garza Creek, and that dam, with a resultant wet year in 1978, created this gully in an area where there was no gully the year before. So response to drought can have a lot of consequences as well. We saw this earlier. I'm not going to dwell on it, but it gives you an idea of the immensity of the area that we're talking about. And here as well. Now I'm going to frame this this valley of ours so that you get some idea a little bit about it. First of all, We showed this earlier too as well, but it gives you some idea of the natural hydrology and what this looked like after the gold rush. You were already starting to have influxes of agriculture. People were starting to use the water the best that they could. They were still having to deal with large floods, as we do too, but they didn't have all the dams up in the Sierra that we have now. Again, the same satellite imagery I showed you earlier. Now, let's frame the valley. The north end of it, Mount Shasta, is what you see when you're in the north part of the valley. If you're going up the Grapevine, I saw this when I was coming here this weekend, coming from the valley going south. To the east, Yosemite Valley there, that's they call it the diving board on Half Dome. And that's the granite type rocks, granitoid rocks of the Sierra Nevada. And out to the west, the sandstone, shales, mudstones, all of the catena of sedimentary rocks as well. So in the Central Valley, agriculture is king. I mean, these numbers are bigger than most people can comprehend. It takes a while for it to sink in. But just the south half of that Central Valley we just saw, the gross agricultural production in 2012, according to the Agricultural Commissioner's report, was $32.4 billion, which is 76% of the total agricultural production for the entire state of California. We saw where Michaels was talking about the Salinas Valley. There's a good chunk of production there as well. You have the Imperial Valley area, some other parts of Monterey County as well, and the north end of that valley as well. But the vast majority is south of Sacramento. Now, at the bottom here, those numbers need to have three more zeros on it, so I just want to make sure you know that. That's $7 billion on the end there, showing these counties. Eight of the top 12 are in the San Joaquin Valley, which is the south part of that Central Valley. Fresno, Kern, Tulare. There's Monterey popping in from the coastal ranges that Michael was talking about. Merced, Stanislaus, San Joaquin, Kings, that's the county that I live in. And then Ventura down south, and then the Imperial. But it's a staggering figure, and it has a lot of socioeconomic importance. We'll talk about that a little later. All this is dependent upon a reliable source of water. The biggest threat is drought and the response to that drought. Now, these are these aren't all official, but this is a good way for me in my mind to stratify what we're talking about. Because when you talk about drought, you're talking, it depends who you're talking to. People have different ideas. And meteorological is two or more successive year of less than average rainfall. Agricultural, if you're having adverse effects on your crop, that's a drought to you. Hydrological, multiple years in which water reserves from all sources fall below the statistical average. Sabrina showed that. I mean, it's not even close right now. That we're so low, it's ridiculous. They're little puddles. Socio-political, a governmental designation for a water-based emergency predicated by a shortage of water required for economic mitigation of effects. So we're in that right now. You get some idea. But anyway, and I'm not going to dwell on the charts themselves, but what I am going to do is take a look at the bottom. These mean lengths and mean intervals, and basically this particular one, a friend of mine, John Austin, wrote a book, Floods and Droughts of the Tulare Lake Basin and Watershed. You can type that in, you can get it free. It's a PDF, Floods and Droughts, Tulare Lake Basin, John Austin. And he's got 1,200 links on that book. So anyway, but it gives you, they use tree rings, like in the sequoias and some of the trees up there, to get an idea. And there are years, there was one year, he said, that 1580, where probably no rain happened. I mean, it was that austere of an environment that year. The mean length, 3.8 years. Mean interval, 12.7 years. We'll just kind of move along a little bit, but I want to just kind of stress some of that. I'm not going to dwell on this. This is some of the hydrological water year designations. I think we'll skip that. Years with less than normal rainfall in the San Joaquin Basin, and that's the Stanislaus, Tuolumne, Merced, and San Joaquin River watersheds. Again, 4.1 year length, 7.9 year interval, a little bit shorter. Average drought length and intervals, going way back to 1566 here, 4.4 and 3.7 length. They're all running around that 4 or a little less. Here's a 5 back in 1566 to 1700. Anyway, the right here, drought occurs about every 10 years and lasts for 4 years. Since 1962, the same area has experienced somewhat shorter, 3.7, and spaced a little further apart, 11.7. You can argue about the specifics about whether it's right on that, but the fact is you're in that ballpark. And I'm not going to dwell on this one too long, too, because it's hard to... But one point to be made, and I think it comes back to what Michael was talking about when they have floods and things, too, and Sabrina as well. You can have multiple floods in a very dry year. Floods don't care whether they happen in a drought year, a normal, some whatever normal is, a normal year, or a very wet year. They can occur, and they do. And so some years, if that one green line over on the right there, that year was 10, there were 10 floods on this particular area of California, 1849 to 2009. So, okay, so in recent years it's become increasingly apparent that we are withdrawing more than we are returning. We have a groundwater overdraft. So our demand for water is dramatically higher than the surface supply. By that definition, we are effectively in drought conditions most of the time, even when precipitation is above average. So in this presentation, San Joaquin Valley is that south part of the valley. Okay, here's that south part of the valley I was talking about. We'll talk a little bit more about the North Valley a little further along. Groundwater, San Joaquin Valley aquifer. There's continuous aquifers. Surface water, again, it's related to all of those streams, the Tuolumne, the Merced, the San Joaquin River, the Tulare Lake Basin ones. That's the Kings, Cahuilla, Tule, and Kern River. So just wanted to kind of throw those out there for these different hydrological systems. But my point is here, we don't have a lot of control over drought. It's going to rain or not rain, but we can control our response to it. The response to extreme drought has a number of impacts, and I'm going to show you some of those. Here's the ones I'm going to look at. Subsidence, salinization, increased costs, reduced ag production, forced change in the choice of crops, loss of jobs, increase in disease. And when I look at that list, it's happened. Every one of those have happened and are happening. Land subsidence, There's three types basically that we're addressing. The worst one as far as groundwater withdrawal is, the worst land subsidence is related to that groundwater withdrawal, and we'll talk about the others briefly. So there's a layer that they pump below or above called the Corcoran clay. By 1960, a lot of pumping had taken place. So we tapped that long ago, and we're starting to reap some of the history. And this shows it right here. Look at that pumping. And then all of a sudden we're down in here. Here's two droughts, 76, 77, 87, 92. But basically, we're taking out a lot, and we took a lot out this year. Probably, I don't know, it's up there. I don't know where it is, but it's up there. But this gives you some idea that a lot of this happened in the past as well. Now, there's an iconic photo, of course. And I will answer that one question that I heard earlier, too, in a little bit here. Entrenchment. The question was asked when Sabrina was talking, what are the responses to that groundwater withdrawal and the resulting subsidence? Well, it's pretty simple, basically. If you have a stream and you drop one end, 12, 13 meters in a very short amount of time, relatively, you've changed the slope of that stream. It's trying to reach equilibrium. As it downcuts, it starts to produce massive amounts of sediment downstream, and at the same time, it starts to collapse because it's going down so fast. This was only 3 feet deep in the 1920s, this stream. This is the Arroyo Pasajero, which goes near Huron and causes mass havoc with the towns and the agriculture down there. So entrenchment is one of the responses to subsidence. This is a gully. I can't prove it, but I've been around a long time out there, and this gully wasn't there, and it goes a mile long, and it's about 10 meters deep in some places. And this is way up the canyon. See, there's a response. Again, it's possibly. I can't guarantee it. I don't know. There's a crack from another type. Now, that's the groundwater withdrawal. This is called hydrocompaction. You say, well, that's not drought. You're putting water on. That's from putting water on and the weight of the water. However, this was mostly sprinkle and furrow irrigated when I first started working out in this part of Fresno County. And these cracks would appear, and they would go several kilometers long, and it would drop. It would drop 50 centimeters sometimes over a period of days. And so I was there, and I was looking at this crack, and I thought, I'm going to get a picture here. This is really good. So I started to get down in there, and this horrible feeling of dread came over me. And I thought, I'm going to die in this crack. I'm going to get sucked down in there. And in those days, we used to listen to Paul Harvey at noon. I mean, you found a tree, and you found Paul Harvey, and you turned him on, and then you listened to him. Well, I could just hear him talking about this guy that died, and then he goes to commercial. And then he comes back, and then he goes, and he was a soil scientist. And so that road used to be level with the surrounding area. This is over at Cam Avenue. And the problem with this was, before they went to drip irrigation, the water would go to the lowest spot in the field, and of course that would be more weight, so that would even accelerate everything. And of course this is a classic photo. This was a test section of the California Aqueduct that they tested. They ponded water for 2 years in large sections of the aqueduct in an area, and I mapped this out on the soil survey of Western Fresno County. There's about 50,000 acres of this particular hydrocompaction, but there's a lot of other areas that have occurred since then that I've seen. So you have the overall subsidence, you can have hydrocompaction on top of that. There's towns that they had to actually move because of the damage to infrastructure. This is in the little town of Three Rocks. It's pretty impressive. The third one, and I'll just throw this in three slides here because we talked about the Delta a little bit. I was fortunate enough to work in the Delta quite a bit, and even this year as a volunteer. Drainage of water, oxidation of organic matter. Again, it has to do with irrigation, and it has to do with the oxidation volatilization into the atmosphere. So this is showing the muck soils. Those are highly organic, and underneath, that's the mineral soil. That hole in the middle is my auger hole. So you get an idea, and there's your oxidation down there. And so there's the peat that's underneath those soils as well. So And that's the same issues that Michael talked about with the saltwater intrusion from the ocean. That's what's happening in the delta. And it's really serious because when you're on an island, I'll just mention this right now, when you're on an island, you're looking at about that angle to the river above you, and you're only protected by a levee. So it's if you ever get a chance to go out there and you haven't done it, I would suggest you do it. It's a good education. So land subsidence, we've seen some of this with Sabrina here. She showed this. It's massive. There's the classic area where Dr. Poland was standing by the pole, which I was at earlier this year. We led a little tour out there. And it's more than 9 meters at that spot. But it's probably closer to 12 or 13 meters now because that was 1971, I believe. So projected subsidence it's not getting a lot better. And it's related to the type of materials that are underneath, some of the clay smectite materials that are way down there because they're pumping from, well, some 1,500 feet, some as deep as almost a half a mile. And just think of the electrical cost on that. And they go day and night. So there's a lot of water being pumped out of it. Now, this is right where I live. I mean, this isn't the west side that doesn't have any groundwater recharge, by the way. This is on the huge Kings River alluvial fan, the place at Hanford. And there's a cone right here. This is... we're getting up there. We're getting close to 10 feet in this particular case, right there just outside the city limits of my town. And, of course, that's going to affect whether you can recharge some of these areas. This has always been a pretty good area to recharge, but we'll see. So real quick generalizations. 30 centimeters had affected more than half the San Joaquin Valley by 72. And at that time, 8.8 meters, and it's a lot more since. And it looks like the average is in about that 30 centimeters per year. Who knows what it is this year? I don't know. I'm going to start doing some, just for my own education, doing some checking on the elevations. They've got engineering equipment now. You can get right down to a millimeter. So subsidence in the San Joaquin Valley is one of the great changes that human activity has imposed on the environment. The greatest vertical subsidence in the world, the greatest aerial extent in the world, the greatest volume in the world, all because of groundwater withdrawal. It's irreplaceable water. It's not water. You can't recharge it. Once you take it out, it's geologic. So you take it out. It was put there. I don't know how old it is, but it's very, very old. When you're down at 1,500 feet or 2,000 feet or half a mile, you're talking water that was put there long, long ago. Okay, salinization. So that's subsidence. Salinization of soils. This is something I grew up with as a kid, being a young soil scientist, when I first came there and found out that white stuff wasn't snow. It's less surface water. The salt's starting to build up, and it's only going to get worse. This is Meridian Nut out of growers out of Clovis. Salinity of groundwater is quite variable, even in the same geographic area, and so is the depth of wells. It really is. It depends on what part of that alluvial fan you're on. I have seen it be... One guy's pumping at 600 feet, the other one has to go 1,500. Variability, of course, within the same orchard. When you're using drip, you're not watering the middle of that orchard. You're using as little water as possible, and, of course, the salt is going in the water and then evaporating. We'll get back to that here. When was the last time, those of you that know this term, any of you heard the leaching fraction or leaching requirement? It used to be standard practice. Any extension specialist, any kind of talk on salinity, that's what you heard. Now, you're just trying to get by now and irrigate your crop. And that's not including excess water to push the salts down. The changing face of irrigation, you don't see this much anymore. Historic water tables, that's a good friend of mine down there back in the 70s. You can't see it, but his reflection's in the water, and it's wicking up towards the surface there. You can see all the salts on the surface. That's near the town of Stratford. Typical scene on almonds now, because they're being pumped, they're being almost all irrigated by water from deep well pumping. And these are slides from a very dear friend of mine, the late Dr. Gordon Huntington from UC Davis, one of my mentors. And this is what they felt in the reconnaissance survey in 1916. What it looked like, the salinity, what it became in 1942 after years, and it didn't get much better. So that little star shows those alluvial fans there, and you can see how some of the alluvial fans will, on that alluvial fan, you start to those are your best soils. So right here, this is my general soil map for Western Fresno County that's online, by the way. All these soil surveys are online at the web soil survey site on archived soil surveys. That's where you want to go for the book, actual book. But these are alluvial fans. This is a fan skirt here. So this is where all the salinity was originally. And these fans were virtually clean. Class 1 lands, all of them, just about, because there's very few sandy ones here. This is really good soil. And these yellow ones here are old fans. They're called fan remnants. So they're sitting up above everything else. Down here, these down here were ones that weren't buried by large alluvial fans. So those are called non-buried fan remnants. Okay, this is really important. The water that they're pumping is about 3 times saltier than the water that's coming through. 3 or 4. I talked to somebody yesterday about that. Than the salinity of the water delivered through the California Aqueduct. So, salty. So salinization is a big deal. It's been a big deal for civilizations all the way back to the Tigris and Euphrates. Increased costs. Managing to ensure a continuous water supply costs money. These things, which we've seen earlier from Sabrina, and I just threw these in. I kind of like some of these historic maps, and I don't need to. This has already been shown to you earlier, so we won't hit that. We won't even hit this. Now there's dams. I always have to throw a fish in there, but this is one of my favorites. It's on the South Fork of this water comes. That's Mono Creek, comes down here, goes into the South Fork of the San Joaquin, goes to the main fork of the San Joaquin, goes to Millerton Lake, and then heads on down the San Joaquin River, makes a right-hand turn, and goes out eventually to the Delta. And that's called Thomas A. Edison Lake. It's my favorite place. Spent a year and a half of days fishing it, total days. to the north, Shasta Dam, Folsom Dam Lake. We saw a picture of that earlier. The southern Sierra Nevada, Lake Isabella, it's way up in the top. This is above the town, up near Onyx Peak, looking down on the fertile valley, above the Kern River. But that there's a dam on that, and that water goes to the Buena Vista Lake, which eventually would flow to the north eventually when it filled up. And down in this area, Casitas, which is water from up here, they just pump it over the Grapevine. And canals. Now, one thing about canals, they do cut off whatever natural hydrology there is. And so this particular case, we're talking flooding. You can see what happens. It's not good. And there's near the Delta as these a series of water conveyances start to take off. And the pumping plant that I saw coming here. There were natural impoundments also, which still might even be a use in the future. Tulare Lake, that was 1998. And 454,000 acres in size in some of the 1860s and some other places subsequent to that. Very, very large lake. And this gives you an idea how this hydrology worked. Kern Lake, Buena Vista Lake, middle of the lake, Tulare Lake, overflow up over a big sill created by the Arroyo Pasajero, had to get so deep before it could go over, and then it would go middle of the valley and eventually into the San Joaquin River and out. I'm not going to try to go over all this. It's too complex. So Proposition 1 passed yesterday, $7.5 billion. We'll go through this very quickly here. Reduced ag. This quote here said it would take 10 years to rebuild their herd for livestock ranchers. We've been measuring one area with the extension and others for about 16 years. It was about somewhere between 14 and 26% rangeland. Same thing here. Drought impacts on perennial crop farmers. They're pulling them out. They're switching their crops. They're leaving fields fallow. And they're selling their water rather than cultivating crops. Here's some farms up in the North Valley. I know I haven't given them their due, but rice fields, they're instead of 300,000 acres flooded this winter, it's 50,000. Pulling out trees. This is his acres. He's cutting back. Every one of them are following some of their land. Everybody I know. Forced change in choice of ag crops. I'm not going to hit that. Trees like that, pistachios are a pretty drought-tolerant crop. These are some of the things we grow. Loss of jobs. And I just want to stress this as I get right here almost to the end of this. There's a socioeconomic cost, but what it really is, it's about people. It's about people that go out every day and stand on a corner waiting for a job, and there isn't one. And this is a quote from a good friend of mine, Irma Cota, who lives in Huron. 50% unemployment, some of the towns. Increase in disease. This is my last little section here. You wouldn't think about it too much, but there's these fungal spores out there, and when you're only irrigating just down the middle of the row, and when you're very dry, we've already had horrible dust storms. I mean, it gets on everything. And this is it's called valley fever. Coccidioidomycosis cases have spiked. Good friend of mine, Dr. McLean, our county health officer. It's bad right now. And here's what it looks like. It started about 09, and they're heading up. This is a really nasty disease. I won't gross you out too long on these slides, but they can do that, and it can kill you. So this is a disseminated form when it gets into your lymph system, and it's just a soil-borne fungus that's more. And so waterfowl's another. They're all crowded together. My wife does raptor rehab, so. I see these things. Avian botulism is real common this time of year. Perfect storm. They're going to have food shortage in addition to a disease outbreak because of the drought for the flyway. Not good. Implications. Two last slides. Drought plus deep well pumping plus saline irrigation water plus no leaching fraction equals the resulting impacts. And here they are, right here. Higher costs. Best soils are becoming salinized at an alarming rate. Permanent crops such as almonds are being removed after decades of unprecedented increase in the number of hectares planted. Number of fallow fields is increasing rapidly. Lack of work for farm workers is creating social unrest and societal problems. Water withdrawn from deep well aquifers is one-time water with little or no recharge possibilities. Soil-dwelling diseases, they thrive in dusty, dry conditions. Thank you.